Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the second day of May, Anno Domini 2020, and you, you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
But what you should mention
first. Mr. Butt to you.
You got to mention.
That just went out over YouTube, by the way.
Yeah, that's all right. Adjusting my glasses. No, you've got to, before the news, mention something else that's far more important.
I was just going to do that. We you may have seen Rob Linton's video that he posted. We made our goal. We raised the $60,000 this station needed to stay on the air. So we're back. That's how that works. And I want to thank each and every one of you as...
In alphabetical order.
In alphabetical order. I want to thank you all because you all stepped up. These are more than normally parlous economic times. And we get that. But you folks stepped up, and we are honored and humbled that you did. We are just delighted. It was great. You folks did an amazing job, and from the bottom of our hearts, we want to thank you for making sure that this station And as far as we're concerned, particularly this show, stays on the air. And that's all on you. And so thank you to each and every one of you. It's great. It's great. Thank you. If you didn't get a chance to pledge, you still can at jazz901.org. Hit the Donate Now button, and you can still donate. And I believe all the benefit things like the tote bags and stuff are all still available until Tuesday night, Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. All right, to the news. Google is cutting the price of its Google Meet video conferencing app all the way down to free. All you need to access it is a Google account, not a price of your G Suite subscription like before, though as part of the launch of this Google Meet free version, G Suite subscribers also get free access to the enterprise version of Meet through September 30th. There are two obvious reasons behind this move. The first is to compete against the recent rise of Zoom, and the other is allowing Google to move one step closer to shuttering Google Hangouts. While Hangouts video chat is still a thing, it will be folded into Meet in the near future. As for competing with Zoom, Google Meet has some stark differences that make it unique among the myriad of Zoom alternatives out there. The free version of Google Meet supports up to 100 Google users in a single call, which is on a par with Zoom. However, Google Meet conferences are only accessible to those with a Google account, and the free version lacks landline dial-in access. Zoom, on the other hand, is accessible to anyone with the proper link or dial-in number. Google Meet will also limit meeting length for free users. Calls can have an unlimited length until September 30th, when Google plans to limit recordings to 60 minutes. G Suite users will still be able to use unlimited length meetings, however. The Google account requirement and lack of dial-in option for the free version makes Google Meet inherently less accessible than Zoom, but it also makes Google Meet meetings less susceptible to Zoom bombing. It even requires users to be accepted into a call before joining if they aren't directly invited by the host. Google Meet also has the benefit of cross-app integration, making it easy to create and join meetings from the Meet Google Calendar and Gmail web pages, as well as Android and iOS apps. The wide range of device and browser support is also a plus for Google Meet. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis, would like us to remind you, is what's your most used video chat program? And the choices are Duo, FaceTime, GoToMeeting, HousePartie, Meet, Whereby, Zoom, and Other. And so far we've got 66 votes in the poll. Zoom is far out ahead of everything else, followed distantly by FaceTime. Meet only has one person. Whereby only has one person. Duo has four. If you're meeting with one or two people, FaceTime or Duo is a nice choice because it runs on the phone and it's nice. But if you're looking at a real meeting and it's more professional, then something like Meet or Zoom is probably better off for you. And I know many of you will have more to say. And also, if you've selected Other, which eight of you did, you should probably head on over to our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, and you will see the forums. The second forum down is the poll discussion. Thank you. Wow. And currently, at least, the first item under poll discussion is 2 May 20. What's your most used video chat program? And why? That's what we would like to know, more than just what we would like to know. Why? And so far, we only have one person who posted. That was me. But yeah. So did you notice it's a little faster? I updated PHP.
Oh yeah, good.
This week, so it's the site is running a bit faster. And it's certainly much more secure. We were not, I can say this now because we're not anymore. We were running an old version of PHP, which had a lot of scary holes in it. We're now on the latest, which has many fewer. We're up there. But and of course, if you'd like to chat about that or ask us a question or whatever, you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. You can text us at 585-209-9010, or of course ask a question there in the YouTube chat.
You know, one thing that you brought up, you know, we were talking about before we came on air, is, you know, more and more folks now are going to the Zoom meetings and everything else, and like you were saying before, the amount of fatigue that it's going to cause in people.
Yeah. Well, yes. And they psychologically.
Yeah.
What happens is I read an interesting article about this. People are suffering from video chat fatigue. Mm-hmm. And it's not they're just tired of video chats. The problem is, in a regular meeting, there are times when no one's looking at you, when you're not important.
You can go to the bathroom.
Well, you go to the bathroom, but you can also just relax for a moment, not just physically, but also psychologically. You know, you can sort of step out of the meeting intellectually for a moment. And it's much harder to do that when there's a couple of dozen eyeballs staring at you in the screen constantly.
Yeah, turn off your webcam, you know, if you're feeling it.
Right.
Because you can still listen. You can still listen to what's going on. Anybody, hey, what happened? I'm here.
Well, I've heard that some offices were just like opening a meeting and just leaving it open all day long so you can chat and like you would at the office. You happen to see someone, you know, hey, how you doing? But then remember to mute your camera or microphone when you have to do something else. The other thing that's kind of ironic is that people that have been live streaming from their homes, YouTube streamers and video game streamers and like that, already have these impressive rigs set up. And it's been kind of funny to watch like the late night talk show hosts try to build this home rig with, you know, not from scratch, not knowing how to do any of that. And so there have been a bunch of YouTube videos popping up on how to make YouTube videos. I was mentioning one earlier from Tested. I'll post a link if I can find it in a minute. He had four different cameras set up on his computer. It's easiest to use the webcam built into your computer.
Yes.
But that has the lowest quality. But it's the fastest speed. It has the lowest latency too. So right. You can plug a higher quality camera in to get better quality. In fact, you might even see that in our stream. I've got Nick on an HD camera, so that's running at 1280 by 1024. No, it's 1920 by 1080. But Dave and I are both on 720 cameras. And so our quality is a little bit less than Nick's.
And we're a little slow.
Well, but I'm a little slow because of the higher quality.
Yeah.
And I'm just a little slow. I mean, that's the way it works.
Now that I think of it, I could tone that down to 720 because I usually have it set for widescreen to get both of us in one shot.
Right.
But now it's since it's just
and the
you,
other thing, like you were brought up and it's been on Facebook, is that poor news reporter that was doing a live shot in her bathroom. It's like, you know, folks, when you're doing some of this stuff, think where you are.
Think about the background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and some other, stuff that's, you know, in your hanging on your walls and everything else. Sometimes that's personal information that, you know, or just info that some of these folks could use it.
Before you get to that, in the early days, there was a couple of guys I saw on YouTube that had just printed out a photo on 8.5 by 11 paper, taped it all together. Yeah, you put it 10 or 12 feet behind you, on the opposite wall. No one can see the tape marks, you can look like you live in a very fancy high rise condo.
Right.
But now a lot of the apps do chroma keying, which is a fancy word for saying remove the background and put something else in.
Well, what I did, I had two choices.
Yep.
I could either clean up the mess behind me in the computer room, or I could buy a web around.
Yep.
So I bought a web around. And a web around, W-E-B around, web around, is just this giant shield that sits on the back of your chair. And it's a green screen.
You don't even need a stand or rigging or cables for it, which is what we typically have been using for years.
Right. I could have gone up in the attic. The people who owned the house before us, their son was a puppeteer, and there's still a puppet rig, puppet booth up in the attic. And I could have pulled that down and done something with all of that.
Puppet show at Nick's this summer.
Puppet show at Nick's this summer. I could have done something with all of that piping, but it was just easier to buy the web around. And so it sits behind me, and when I'm chatting with my daughter, I'm often chatting from like Wakanda or the Bat Cave or, you know. my daughter prefers I put Arkham Asylum behind me because she says that's where I belong. So.
And there's a lot of different brands of them, but this one's kind of neat because it does hook onto your chair and doesn't need a rig behind it. But it sold out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As I was hitting the buy it button, I saw one left.
Yeah.
And I got it, and it's been out ever since.
Yep.
Have you seen those new chairs that they're advertising? Yeah. You know, $100 off. And I mean, they look like super comfortable chairs, but discounted. Even the lowest line is $597, and that's with $100 off. And it's like,
well, they're gaming chairs. Oh, they're not only super comfortable, but they've got speakers in the wings, the head wings and everything else. And some of them massage you and do all sorts of, or at the very least, they have thumpers. So, you know, if you're playing a game where you hit something or you get hit by something, it thumps.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Some of the video chat software does do chroma key without needing a colored background. So it can try to remove the background behind you automatically. It's trickier that way, and you need a better video card. We were in a meeting the other day, and a couple of people didn't have that option, and were really confused, and they didn't have that option. So, well, you must not have a strong enough video card,
right,
to be able to do that. It is easier if there is a solid color, weird color background behind you, so that it doesn't have to remove everything behind you. But we've seen for years on, like the weather reports where the weatherman is waving his hands in front of a blank screen. Every now and then he'll wear a tie that's, too close to the color. Or was it the Queen's speech a few weeks ago where she wore that green dress and everyone's been chroma keying it?
Chroma keying all kinds of things in it. Well, yep. I saw a video the other day with a guy who was, had a chroma key background, but he was also drinking something that was green. I don't know if it was green tea or, you know, Sprite, or I don't know what it was.
Yep.
But every time he lifted it up, you could see the background through his body. It was pretty funny stuff.
I always like that with the tie where it's raining on his tie.
Right. The other thing about Google Meet, that you have to remember. It is free up to 100 members through September. Normally it's $6 per user per month. So, wow.
Yeah, that's...
There's a lot of revenue they're losing.
Yeah, but there are two things also that make it really, really useful for people. One is that it is end-to-end encrypted.
Well, there's a lot of confusion about that. So, from my end to Google is encrypted.
Right.
Then they decrypt it and re-encrypt it to go to your end?
I don't think so. That's how Zoom does it.
But when you have 20 people on, that means each stream has got 20 encryption keys? Or one encryption key for everybody?
I don't know that.
Yeah, that's what nobody knows about the background.
But it's still, if it is end-to-end encrypted.
Yeah.
As opposed to Zoom.
Well, they say end-to-end encrypted, but they mean from you to them.
Right. But with Zoom, we know it's not end-to-end encrypted.
Yeah. And, from whose end to whose end.
As Steve said... it's encrypted from you to the server, and then it's re-encrypted from the server to the other person. Well, that means that at the server, anybody can see what you're doing. And let us never forget that Zoom has mistakenly routed many people's video chats through servers in China. So I personally would not use Zoom for business.
Yeah,
absolutely would not.
Think?
But it's the easiest to set up, and that's why it becomes the default option now. There are up to 300 million users in April.
And another really nice thing about Google Meet is that it has real-time AI-generated closed captioning, which means it doesn't get it right all the time. But if you have deaf or hard of hearing people... you can turn on the closed captioning, and that's automatically done for you.
Sweet.
So, I don't have it free yet. I tried to log into my Google Meet account, and it says it will be soon available for free.
They were supposed to start April, I think, whatever next Saturday is, 8th.
Yeah, I'm reading their article, and it says soon.
May?
It said today.
May?
We're making our,
May.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no date on it, but it says today.
Yeah. So that's pretty nice. And of course it's completely integrated with Docs, Sheets, Slides, and Calendar, so that's pretty cool as well. But you do have to be you don't have to be a G Suite customer through the end of September, but you do have to have a Gmail address, which is free, and you don't have to use for anything but this, so it's not that big a deal.
People don't realize how many services are behind their Gmail address.
Yeah.
Contacts and calendars and phone calls and meetings and
photos
messaging and photos, yeah. They have so many features back there.
It is pretty amazing. We did have a question. Poor David has been waiting. All right, Facebook Messenger. I completely forgot Facebook Messenger. I did put Facebook.
They just added a new multi-messenger video chat feature for free.
Yeah.
I think you don't need a Facebook account, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But now they've tied you to someone who does have a Facebook account, so you get a shadow account.
That's exactly right. And I personally would never use Facebook for anything I didn't have to, ever. David and in the chat said, I'm thinking of buying a Raspberry Pi 4 and making a streaming box. What do you think? Dave, didn't you do that? Did you do that?
No. I've got a Raspberry.
Talking about it.
I've got a couple Raspberry Pis, but I've been using that for ham radio, and I set one up. Well, like I say, a couple of them I can do... for other applications, TV and that type of stuff. But then the main ones, I've taken those down and doing mainly ham stuff with them on stuff they call All-Star and Echolink. Yeah. And that's literally just using the internet for folks to talk all over the world.
Okay, yeah, that's different.
Yeah.
I know several people who've made a streaming box out of a Raspberry Pi 4. You definitely want the 4. Because that's the much faster one. You want a decent amount of RAM in it, so make sure you get the 4 gig model. And you might a couple of other things. You want a very fast hard drive, so USB 3. Use the USB 3 for the hard drive. And the other thing is get one of the active cooling cases.
Yeah, you got to get a case with a good size fan on
the
it.
The fan is going to be about the same size or bigger than the Raspberry Pi.
And it's going to be noisy.
No, but that's the thing. Now they're coming out with some that are ultra quiet. They're more money. Yes, and you can sit there and say, well, it's only a fan. Yeah, it makes a difference. You won't hear that harmonics and everything else and cause you other issues. So go for the few bucks more and get the better fan. It says ultra quiet and that. Go for it.
Right. But having the active cooling case, Raspberry Pi, the threes, you can run with passive cooling, not a problem. The fours get really hot, particularly when you're using it for things like video. So you definitely want active cooling.
Yeah, it's a must. Well, I would say any Raspberry Pi 4, no matter what you're going to do, spend the money up front and just get the fan, you know, the real good case, coolant fan on it that will, no matter what, you change your mind and do it for this one moment, and maybe next month you decide to do something else, it can handle it.
Right, the Argon 1 is the one that everybody's really pushing right now for the Raspberry Pi 4. It's a like Dave said, it's a little more expensive, but well worth it.
Yeah.
It's the Argon 1, and I think it's
Word 1.
The what?
The Word 1.
The Word 1?
Capital O-N-E.
Yeah. Argon and the Word 1, A-R-G-O-N space O-N-E. And many people are, the FLIRC case as well, FLIRC, is also supposed to be very, very good. But the Argon 1, the Argon Neo is not bad, but the 1 is the one that everybody's touting. We've got at least time to take the question from Larry from Rochester, New York. Hi, Larry, what's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I'm glad because I'm a member, made the can't think of it. I'm done.
Yep. Thank you. Yes, we made our goal, and we appreciate it.
Since I have nothing to do these days, I've been trying to detox my Mac and speed it up a little bit by getting rid of files and things. And what I've discovered is I've got just tons of files here that I didn't even know I had anymore. But when I open up my Finder, it opens up to some place that I don't even know where it is, and it looks like it's showing virtually every file that I have on the machine. And a lot of them are from Microsoft Outlook email or something like that. I'm a little afraid to start deleting onesie-twosie because I'm wondering if this is just showing what I have in places where I've tried to clean up the drive by putting Word files actually in a Word folder, that kind of thing. So I don't even know where this is, but I open it up and it's showing simply everything. And I don't know how to account for it or where it's located.
At the very top of the window is the name of the window. And that tells you the name of the folder you're in. What can be handy is in the view menu, there's a command to show the path bar. And that will show you the path of a file you select. It sounds like you might be opening the recent folder, which
I am.
That's basically
look at the top. I looked up and it says recent.
Yes, so that's basically.
I don't have any clue what recent is.
That is a smart search of all the files that have been opened recently. So it's not something you've done. It's a feature built into the OS.
Okay, Larry, can you hang on? We got to take a break.
Yes, I can.
Okay, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Larry from Rochester, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's the truly grateful to you that we can continue to be member-supported Jazz 90.1. Well done. We'll see you in just a couple.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we still have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line talking to Steve about his Mac and the Recents folder.
Yeah, the Recents is a little tricky because the theory, at least, it's files that you've worked on recently. But it can be sometimes temp files that the program you're in worked on, because it's recent. And as you've seen, it's files that are in your email, especially if there's an attachment, that attachment gets downloaded and it's in your email. So as I mentioned, if you turn on that path bar, when you tap a file in the recent list, it will show you the path of that folder. And if anything says library, stay out of it.
Yeah, no
if
kidding.
Anything in the path is the library, that's all managed by the system, and you don't want to go messing in your libraries. Because
now,
typically the library is pardon?
Where's the path bar again?
In the view menu, there's a command to show path bar and hide path bar if it is showing.
Okay.
So then
well,
when
I'm
you tap.
I'm going to just tap show. In the view menu. Wait a minute. Hide sidebar, hide path bar. So. Oh, got it. Okay. Yeah.
And then at the bottom of the window, it shows you the path of the file that you've selected.
Right,
and the path
right.
is just the subfolder, the folder that it's in until it gets to the actual
right.
file.
Right.
But in general, the recents is just a list of all the files that the system has touched.
Yeah. There used to be one called All My Files. And that was even worse because it would show system right. files, too.
Oh, that's not good.
So this is just recent. So I have 491 in my list of recent files.
Right, but they're not all files you've – this is the important thing.
Yeah.
It's not all files you've actually looked at. It's files that have been touched by the system, downloaded,
yep.
changed, added. So you should see logs in there and everything else.
Right.
So that's generally not a particularly useful place to be. You should when you open the Finder, you should probably move somewhere else.
You can hide that recent list from the sidebar. If you control click on it, you can remove it from the sidebar. And it's in the Finder preferences too, if you want to turn that on and off. We see a lot of people getting confused by that. But then on the other half, a lot of people only use that. They never look when they save a file. They never know what name they saved a file under. Well, it's just in my recent list. Well, that doesn't help me when I'm trying to find the file that I'm moving to a new computer.
Right.
Or, you know, my file got corrupted, so where was it? Oh, it was in Word. Oh, what folder did you put it in?
Right.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't put it in a folder. Yes, you did when you saved it the first time.
Yeah, if it's not on your desktop, it's in a folder.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that gives me a lot of help because I was looking at this, and now that I look at the bottom, I just clicked on an old Outlook email here, and it's going through 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 folders.
Yep.
As Steve said,
as long as they're not a library, you're fine.
You're probably fine. Yeah, and Outlook, and I hate this about Outlook. It saves your mail in an invisible container folder. So it makes it hard to manually back up, but the automatic Time Machine backup will back up your mail. A lot of people forget about backing up their mail.
Backing up the mail?
Yeah, when you back up your computer, typically your email, it's your photos and your email are the two most important things to most people.
Right.
And so if you just back up, say a documents folder, you're mm-hmm. you're maybe not getting your mail.
Well, if your mail is IMAP.
Well,
it's still
I use
saved.
Time Machine since
yeah.
Steve slightly scolded me a year or so ago about backing up every couple of months.
He just
so
schooled you.
Yeah.
I back up now. I put it in Time Machine. The only problem yep. I have with Time Machine, it looks like 3, 4, 5, 6 times a day. It just backs up.
It backs up every hour.
Oh.
So that you don't lose more than an hour's worth of work. But then at the end of the day, it condenses that into a day. And at the end of the week, it condenses that into a week.
Ah, that's how that works.
Yeah.
Oh. Okay, so I don't need to turn it off then. That's doing me a favor.
Right, it does it all by itself. And it's best to have a dedicated drive for your backup.
I do.
And it will fill the drive.
Right.
And then when the drive gets full, you get a warning about it's going to delete old backups to make room for new backups.
Right, I've got it on an external 2 terabyte drive.
Yeah, that'll last a while. What we often recommend for people is when their backup drive does get full, get another one.
Right.
Just in case there's something you deleted 6 months ago or 6 years ago that you don't want pruned from your backup.
Okay. Well, you've given me more information than I thought I was actually calling for, so I'm going to actually continue to sit here in my spare time and detox this machine.
Good for you.
And see if I can get it up again.
Good for you.
All right. Thank you so much, and thank you for being there.
Yep. All right, Larry.
You're
thank
welcome.
You.
Uh-huh. Bye.
And I do need, It's kind of hard to do. I do need to warn people about cleaning programs that you find online, both Mac and Windows. A lot of them are just crap.
How do you really feel?
And you know, they'll clean your computer and you'll never see any of your files again.
Right.
Or some of them will give you a list of files and ask if you want to delete them or not. You can do that yourself. You bought the programs to let it do it for you. There was an issue on the Macs for a while. A lot of Mac programs come with multiple languages built into a single program file because the Mac supports dozens of languages off the bat. There was a program that would go through and remove all the other languages except the one you wanted to use, and then each program would get a few K or maybe a few megs smaller. When hard drives were tiny, that was a big deal, maybe. But a lot of programs then, and especially now, stop working because the program file has been modified.
Right.
And it doesn't know if that was an intentional modification or you've been attacked by some malicious software.
Right.
So they don't like having those language files removed. And it's frustrating because we're back to small drives again because we went to SSDs.
Right.
And because they're generally more expensive than HDs, laptops are getting smaller drives again. 128, 256 is now common in a laptop where it used to be, you know, a terabyte spinning drive.
All right, we did have somebody text back in. This was from last week. It says, hi, last week I texted in complaining about the lack of a good dialer on a Pixel that would allow me to select a specific number of people to call. I found an app, TruePhone, very versatile, took a while, a lot of trial and error.
Excellent. Good for you. TruePhone.
Yeah.
So anybody who's looking for that and needs it, I see last week's, I was the third caller last week. So yeah, excellent. Very nice. Very nice. Well done. Thank you for following up with
sharing,
that.
Yeah, and sharing it with us.
Yeah, thank you for that. That's great. Okay, so when you're buying a new Chromebook, which you probably should do, one thing we should all by now be trained to look out for is its expiration date, or the date after which you will no longer receive updates. It seems Google has found a clever potential solution to make the end of OS updates less of a death sentence for your Chromebook by separating browser updates from Chrome OS updates. Every 6 weeks or so, Google releases an update for Chrome, which most people install for its fun and exciting new features or whatever.
Yeah.
Or it just automatically installs it by itself.
Yeah.
Just you don't let even you have know, to do
restart your machine so that it can take effect.
Right. It's all you have to do. Even if you don't care about the features, though, it's important to keep Chrome up to date so that you have the latest security updates to keep your computer and information safe while browsing. Even on older desktops and Android phones, it's easy to update Chrome to keep the browser secure. However, on Chromebooks, the version of your browser is directly tied to your OS getting updates. This means once your Chromebook reaches its update expiration date, your browser will slowly become more vulnerable. Thankfully, this may be about to change. Google has been working for a few months on a new project in Chrome codenamed LaCrosse. Capital L, lowercase a, capital C, lowercase R, capital O, lowercase S. This name is obviously not very descriptive on its own, but after some digging, we've got a decent idea what's going on. First, we noticed the project was at one point instead called Linux-Chrome. Also, researchers found a conversation between two developers with two key quotes that more or less explain exactly what LaCrosse was trying to do. Between these two things, a more complete picture develops. Google appears to be trying to separate Chrome OS system updates, which bring cool new features like virtual desk and quick answers, from browser updates by including a separate installation of Chrome that can be independently updated. That means once your Chromebook has hit its expiration date, you'll still be able to update your browser and continue using the web with the latest security updates. This would extend the security and usability of Chromebooks well beyond their normal expiration date. Many of you are used to this already, since you're using a version of Windows that's at least 6 months out of date. Some of you using one that's from 1995. Dave Enright.
No, not anymore.
Yeah. Now you're smug because your computer died. It had nothing to do with you. Obviously, this would be no small undertaking and would require thorough testing before reaching the average person's Chromebook. Given this is a massive change and the fact that Google's Chrome team is currently working on an adjusted schedule due to the you-know-what, It's too early to say when we can expect LaCrosse to possibly arrive. If and when it does, though, it's clear the Chromebook owners will have less to fear when their device's expiration date arrives. So how's your Chrome experience, and when is your expiration date? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Wait a minute. In defense of my old poor little machine, yes, that was a Windows 7 machine. It worked great, but, and here's the big caveat, it was not connected to the internet.
Right.
I do everything on the Chromebook. That way, I don't have to worry about anything. I'm not going to get any viruses, spyware, malware, or anything else. And like you said, the great thing about the Chromebook is all of a sudden I'll see a little thing down the bottom of the corner says, oh, restart so updates can take effect.
Right.
Oh, okay. That's all I have to do. And everything else just happens. I mean, it's so fast and no worries. Oh, I don't have to worry about... is this version of Windows going to tank the machine or, you know, cause havoc or this or that? I don't worry about it. Not with the Chromebook.
Right.
And, that's part of the problem. When you buy a computer, you're not thinking about how long it's going to last or you might be thinking about how long it's going to last depending on your last one, but you're not thinking about how long the OS is going to last or get updates or things like that.
Right.
So we have to add something else to our already full plate.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you have a Chromebook and you want to know how long it will continue to get updates, it's easy. In the lower right corner where the time is, click that, and you'll get that pop-up, and then you'll see the settings, the little gear icon, hit settings. When that comes up, select About Chrome OS, and then on that first screen, the fourth or fifth thing down is Additional Details. Click on that, and you'll see Update Schedule. In my particular case, this device will get automatic software and security updates until June 2026. And if you click learn more, you will, and this is a shock, I know, learn more.
Yeah. So Google and Microsoft both publish these lists. Apple doesn't. And they've never said, but I partly think that's because they don't know. they keep updating an OS until some new hardware won't support it anymore. And so you can run a fairly modern OS. In fact, the 1015 was a huge update because it went 32-bit only. And so you can run a pretty modern OS on a 10-year-old computer. You probably have had to add RAM at the time. You probably had to put a bigger hard drive in, but the OS will still run. Although we still get people coming in running 10-year-old OSs because they've never updated.
Right. And can only update so far.
Eventually,
with
you can
those 10-year-old machines.
Yeah. So we're seeing about 10 years is the usual life of a computer before it can't get in any new OS, but the old OS still works. But eventually what happens is what your story was about, is the browser quits working because there's no updates for it. And so the Safari built into the Mac is part of the OS and not updated
separately.
Major updates don't come out separately. So a lot of people will shift to Firefox and Chrome to be able to run on an older OS if they want to keep their 10 or 12-year-old or 20-year-old Mac still working.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Rochester, New York. What's up, Roger?
Hi there. One of my neighbors came up to me yesterday, and she says to me, she says, I want to get a computer. She'd never owned one. She's up in her age. And she said, I want to listen to podcasts and possibly do mail. And I said, well, get a phone. She said, I don't want a phone. Got any good, reasonable, easy-to-use suggestions?
It depends. What is her email client? What is her email? What does she get?
Oh, I don't think she has one.
She doesn't have one. Tell you what, get a Chromebook. A couple of hundred bucks. Yeah, a couple of hundred bucks. You can do, all the YouTube and listening to music and all the yada yada. And Gmail, which is web-based and easy enough to do. Rather than spending $1,000 or $800, you can get away with $300 or $400 or even $200 if she doesn't mind being a little slow. If she doesn't need more, if she truly is only going to want to be listening to music and podcasts and doing email, then a Chromebook is more than adequate for what you're looking for.
Right, or even a tablet, which will be a little physically smaller.
Yeah, that's where I was talking about, the tablet. But when I started looking at tablets, I know that Walmart has one, a no-name, that's about $100. And I've heard it's pretty good, but it's not trivial to use either. So I don't know. This woman never played with any kind of high-tech or any kind of tech at all. She's up in her mid-70s or 80s.
It'd just be easier for her to type on a real keyboard than to try to type on a tablet.
On a tablet keyboard. So what do you want to be able to have to teach her to do is going to be the question.
I don't want to teach her anything if I can help it.
Yeah. She's got to find someone to teach. That's what we always joke. You know, get the machine your friends have so you can have someone to call for questions.
But generally...
That's why I don't try to fix machines, because then you end up owning them.
Right. So one of the things that's nice about a Chromebook is that it is fairly easy to use. You do have to remember your password so you can log in, but she can call you every day to tell you that, for you to tell her that. But once it opens up, as with so many other machines nowadays, across the bottom, you've got that bar where you can put icons. So you can put an icon for Gmail. You can put an icon for her favorite podcast site. You can put an icon for her favorite music site, that sort of thing. And all she has to do is click the icon, and she's in and working.
Okay, I'm assuming that the Chromebook will do TuneIn and iHeart and all that stuff.
Certainly, the web-based versions in particular, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. And there are probably apps for them,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you just download the iHeart app, and away you go.
Yeah, remember, the Google, if you get a version, well, even the 2-gig ones will do it, but I would suggest the 4 gig of memory, but it runs Android, so you can download many Android apps, which you can also put on that icon bar.
I didn't realize it was Android. Okay.
Yeah, so with that, you can download the iHeart Android app, the iTunes, TuneIn Android app, and all of that stuff.
And the Jazz 90.1 app?
Which you must have.
But if, well...
So that way she can listen to sound bites.
That's all right.
Yeah. Are the Android app?
One question for Android, and it's a yes or no. Are there a number of 2 and 4 432 computers around running digital reflectors?
That I don't know.
I know that there's one over in the Greece area, but other than that one, I don't know of any others.
Well, there is the other reflector is the East Coast reflector.
The who?
East Coast Reflector.
Yeah, but that's something else. Isn't that D-Star or something?
No, they're pretty much analog. And you can go through Echo Link and that on them. And some, I think they might. If you go to the East Coast Reflector website.
.com.
Yep. East Coast Reflector website. Okay. It'll show you the different modes that you can do, because check-in is on Tuesday nights and Q&A. But, yeah, you can get in there. I think they're 146.790, I think.
Oh, the old 79, huh? Okay.
Yeah, they're down on 70. They have both 2-meter and 770, or 70-centimeter.
I'll look. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks.
Thanks for both questions. Thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah.
Thanks.
Now, Nick, are the Android apps at the same level as a Chrome app?
Yes.
And then, okay.
These days, essentially, you have three operating systems inside your Chromebook. You have the Chrome OS, the Android OS for apps, and Linux. And I've got all three of those on my bar, and I can run any one of them without a problem.
Yeah. I was looking in the Play Store, and all the apps have Google versions as well.
Right. So you can load any of those apps.
So if I load the Google version, the Android version, and the Linux version at
the
same time?
And run all of them simultaneously. You try that. I'm not going to. But yeah, so you can run, I'll pick the middle one. So you can run all three. Things from all three, and you can run them all simultaneously. So right now I've got Linux up on my, I've got my Chromebook here, and it's a very slow 2-gig Chromebook. But I've got Linux up and running so that I can do my timers. I've got that I wrote in Python. I've got Chrome up so I can do all this stuff. And just a few minutes ago, I was running an Android app as well. So you can do all of them simultaneously. How many of them you can run simultaneously has to do with how much hardware, RAM you have.
Yeah, because on the Macs, we've got the Mac and Unix, and most Linuxes will run too. But I just started looking for Android emulators to run Android, and there are a few of them to run Android on apps on the Mac.
Yeah, but for what you paid for that machine, you have no qualms. It is kicking butt.
It's kicking butt, and I admit it. Here's the thing about this machine. I go to a site called Woot.com, Woot.com, and if you've never heard of it, I apologize for sending you to it.
I had to stop.
You have to stop. Because every day they have a whole bunch of deals. Not all of them are amazing, but many of them are amazing. And every once in a while they have refurbished computer hardware. Mm-hmm. And this was a refurbished Chromebook. It's an HP 14-inch, blah, 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 blah. $170. Cheap at half the price.
Yeah. Ooh.
And I've not had a day of problems with it, and it runs like a top. It is a little slower than my high-end $600 Chromebook.
Yeah, which it better
that's
be.
That's a shock, but I don't. That's not a problem. It's not so slow that I can't use it for real-time stuff here at the show.
They're doing a special for May the 4th be with you, too.
Right.
Which reminds me.
Star Wars Day is
on Monday. Yep. And Disney Plus has been running ads. The Star Wars fans will watch all 9 episodes in a row. The tourists will do all the ancillary movies in the correct chronological order, too. And then Tuesday is Cinco de Mayo, which occurs on Taco Tuesday. But we're all affected by a virus named after a Mexican beer. So we're going to have tacos and Corona for Cinco de Mayo.
But yeah, in terms of Chromebooks, they have become much, much, much more capable than they originally were. And I have no hesitation any longer since you can run Chrome stuff, Android stuff, and Linux stuff simultaneously. All right, that music tells me that you have wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense, but ho-ho! Ho ho! Say I. You have. We're only halfway through this show, so you've got another opportunity to learn from your mistakes, which I know you won't do because you're going to stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. Give us a call 585-966-5299, 1-800-790. 0415. And let me take a quick opportunity to once again thank each and every one of you for your generosity. We did make our goal, and we are honored, pleased, and delighted that you have come with us on this journey and become members of the Soundbites family. Stay tuned. We're taking a slightly longer break, but we will see you on the other side.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Online at jazz901.org.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's right, Soundbites, live on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Before we get to the phones, I just want to thank you all again. As you know, we've had a pledge drive, and you folks came through. You folks came through once again. We raised 60 $1,000, which is why we're here today. That keeps this station on the air quite literally. I know it sounds hyperbolic, but the fact is it's true. This is how we keep ourselves on the air. That would help. That's a problem.
Just got a little battery warning.
Steve had forgotten to plug in his laptop, and he's only running three cameras and about 40 programs.
It was 42% half an hour ago. Now the trick is going to be, can it charge and run at the same time?
Yeah, right. But we do want to thank each and every one of you for your generosity, for stepping up in these parlous economic times, more parlous than normal. And we thank each and every one of you, and we are honored and humbled that you have become members of the Soundbites family and that we managed to keep this station on the air for a while. And that's all on you. So thanks to each and every one of you for your generosity and your support. And now to the phones. Our next caller is Scott from Rochester, New York. Hi, Scott. What's up?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Not bad. I was trying to set up my HP printer so that I could scan from my Chromebook. And I got into, scan with web scan. And I went through some of the steps. I put the printer's IP address in to one of the tabs on the Chromebook. So it was setting up. It said it was going to take a few minutes. So I don't know if I screwed up, because I went to another tab to eliminate some bookmarks while I was waiting, and when I went back to the other tab where it was supposedly configuring or whatever it was doing, it said that, I don't have the exact wording of it, but it never did it.
Yeah.
And so I've got this site can't be reached.
Right. So here's the thing. This is where what we were talking about earlier comes in super handy. Don't use the web version. Download the Android app. HP has a great Android app for scanning and everything else. And if you download that and run it on your Chromebook, it runs like a top. It works great.
Is that HP Scan?
Okay, hold on.
I've got my Android here, I was able to scan from my Android phone, but I wanted to do it on the Chromebook.
Well, what I'm saying is you can run Android apps on your Chromebook.
If it's a new enough Chromebook.
All Chromebooks can do that?
How old is your Chromebook?
It's about 2 years old, I think.
Yeah, you should have no trouble. You can run Android apps on it. You may have to, in that version, you may have to turn them on, but hold on a second.
So the fact that you can print from your Android device means that the scanner has the web scan up and running already.
So that's the
first step is get the printer set up.
Smart.
Yeah.
Right. So you can do printing, scanning, everything that you would normally do from your phone. You can also do from your Chromebook using the Android app. So if you were to go into settings. If you click on the time in the lower right corner and then select that little gear icon, it brings up settings.
Right.
One of the things down on the left is apps.
Okay, I see.
Yep, and it says it should say something along like manage your apps followed by Google Play Store.
Yeah.
If it says those things, then you can run Android apps on your Chromebook, and it is much easier to do that stuff you're talking about doing through that than through the web interface, which is clumsy at best. And frankly, HP's not doing a lot to maintain that because of the app.
Oh, okay. Well, I wasn't sure if it was HP Smart. I didn't really find it in the web store when I was looking for it on Chromebook, but maybe I missed it.
Right.
Well, in the Chrome web store, it will only show you the Chrome apps. You have to look in the Android web store.
You want the Android apps store, not the which you can also, by the way, download yourself. The Play Store is an Android app, and you can download the Play Store. You can download the music, the video, movies rather, So you can download all of those apps to your Chromebook and run them there just like you run them on your phone.
And it may be easier. I'm posting the link now. HP has a link that takes you right to the HP Smart app for each of the OSs.
Perfect.
To directly download it.
Oh, okay.
Perfect.
So I would have that choice, and you said either the Play Store or the Web Store? That's all I see on mine.
Well, you want Play Store. The Web Store is stuff for Chrome OS.
Oh.
The Play Store is stuff for Android.
Oh, I see. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Couldn't it say Chrome Store and Android Store?
Yes, it could, but it doesn't.
Yeah, it could.
I wish it would.
Why make life easy?
And when the Play Store has more than games, it's not the Play Store anymore?
Yeah, that's what I thought it was, mostly.
Well, you play music. You play movies.
Yeah.
You play games.
You play at word processing.
Playing with different apps.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I didn't think of it that way.
Yeah, that's a dumb way to think of it, but that's the way Google thinks.
Because all the other names were taken.
All the other names were taken.
Okay. Well, thank you, guys. I'll try that.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you. That is, again, the power of Chrome, since you can run three operating systems and do pretty much anything you want. I can run Thunderbird on my Chromebook, and it runs great. Now, on this one, it's only a 2-gig machine, so I don't. But I could.
Just because you can do a thing doesn't mean you should do a thing.
Yeah, ain't that the truth? All right, back to the phones. Waiting patiently has been Mark from Greece. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. How you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
I'm doing the same. Just was going to say, you were mentioned about old machines earlier, and you were chastising Dave.
Well, we like doing that.
what I did is I had an old Optiplex 745 here, an old Dell.
Yeah.
And I put Linux Mint Cinnamon on it, and I'll tell you what, it's only got 4 gigs of RAM in there, but it runs like a top.
Yep,
runs like a top. And man, if you're going to go to Linux from Windows, I would suggest Cinnamon over almost any of them.
Yeah, it's a very easy, very familiar, very simple to use.
Yet it's still pretty eye candy.
Oh, it's very pretty eye candy, and it works great.
It's got Ubuntu under the lid, right?
Right.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'm having a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, and that's a nice thing to remind everybody when your system is too old to run the newest operating systems. And this is true of these days, whether it's a Mac or a Windows machine. If it will no longer update to the latest version of your operating system, you can always put a version of Linux on it.
The hardest part is just getting it to boot properly from a flash drive and making the flash drive. And even then, you go on YouTube, and I'll tell you what, they've got a million solutions for you.
Right. It's not terribly difficult to do.
Yeah.
And once you've upgraded, it's like getting a whole new machine.
Yeah, I mean, this Optiplex was a Windows 7 machine, and it was upgraded to 10, and of course, you know, it crawled.
Right.
And I just put it in the closet and hadn't used it in 2 years, 3 years, and I pulled it out. I said, "I'm going to put a Linux operating system on it." And I looked for, the recommendations, and it said 2 gigs of memory, but better for 4.
Right, and you'll find
that 4. So
and there you go. You'll find that one of the lovely things about Linux is that it will extend the life of an old machine. We've been talking about this before. What's the value proposition of your machine? If you can't update it to your own operating system after 2 years or 4 years or 8 years or whatever the time is, do you throw it away, or do you just stick it in a closet and never use it again? Or do you put Linux on it and continue to use it every single day?
Right.
It's a nice feature.
And you have the option of maybe even putting Wine on it.
Exactly. And then you can run Wine is a program that lets you run many, not all, but many Windows programs under Linux.
Wine is not an acronym.
It's not, an emulator.
Not an emulator. It's not an emulator. You know, yeah.
Right. Wine stands for wine is not an emulator. It's wine, a recursive.
Yeah. Wine died on Catalina because it's only 32-bit.
Right.
They don't have a 64-bit version.
Right. And actually, somebody pointed out in here, Archander pointed out when you said 32-bit earlier, you meant 64.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, Archander,
it won't run 32-bit anymore. Yeah. Market.
Right, right, right.
It's also a great solution for a laptop.
Yeah, it really is.
I mean, especially if you're not worried about doing anything too heavy-handed, you don't have to get into too much of how to get programs on it and all that. It comes with a browser. It comes with an Office suite. I think it's LibreOffice?
LibreOffice. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it came with. And put it on a laptop and use it for another 3-4 years until the hard drive dies.
Well, I'll tell you what. I've got a 6-year-old laptop. I've been running Linux on it for 6 years.
Right.
And it runs great every single day. I do an update once in a while, and boom, I'm good to go.
The only thing I think I'm going to do is I think I'm going to invest into an SSD for it because I can get one really cheap.
You get one of those really cheap. You have less storage space generally, but it's so much faster.
Not on that Optiplex. It's only got 80 gig drive on it.
Yeah, so you'll win. I'll tell you what, my little old Linux laptop now boots up in the same 8 seconds my Chromebook does.
Yep.
Boom, done.
I can get a PNY SSD, I think, at Best Buy for under $80.
That's what I got.
Yeah.
And it's run fine for 6 years.
In my old Gateway, it's still running Windows, and that thing boots in 25 seconds.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
I hadn't realized they were still selling the Optiplex brand name. It's 27 years I've been selling the brand Optiplex, mostly a business brand.
Different models in it. It's not funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's the problem. When someone says I have an Optiplex, okay, 27 years, and I'm scrolling and scrolling, and number of models.
And you look up 745, and there's like 5 different models that they've done. Some that had the monitors built onto them with a handle case, and there's like 5 different ones. And it took me a while because I had to update the BIOS.
Yeah, that's the problem with
challenge.
Right. That's the problem with all of these things. The model names and model numbers are not necessarily unique, and they're not necessarily known. So, for example, I've got one of my I don't remember the exact number, but it's something like CT343QAL. Well, you go to look that up, and there is no such animal, but that's the model number. There's a 343, and there's the 343Q, and et cetera, but no 343QAL or whatever the actual number is.
That's the problem I have with my Gateway. It was a 4860, and then it's a UP33-something.
Yeah.
You know, so it that was a little difficult to find what I needed for that one, too. But, you know, like I said, YouTube's a great little place to find some solutions for things, especially when you're not sure.
Yep, exactly right.
Because I needed a new CMOS battery in that computer.
That's how old it is.
In that Dell, and I'll tell you what, I messed it up at first. It wouldn't boot, just kept beeping.
Yeah.
And YouTube saved me, so.
Yep, well done. All right, thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Have fun.
Have a good day.
You too.
We always got a kick out of the Macs. There was a range there where they were saying summer, 2000.
Yeah.
And they always had parenthetically, or actually usually with an asterisk, in all their printed literature, summer in the Northern Hemisphere.
Oh, yeah.
So now they're just doing early 2020,
Yeah, right.
So we had our early 2020 MacBook Air come out and our early 2020 iPhone SE. Actually, the iPhone SE is only 2020. So that implies there won't be another one this year because it's not early 2020.
Right.
Although they could come out with one and call it late 2020.
They could, yes. Yeah, I think what they're doing is hedging their bets because heaven knows when they're going to ramp up to full production and et cetera, et cetera. So just 2020. Yep. Sometime this year there will be a new phone. And if it's early, maybe we'll get a late one out and maybe not, but let's not promise. I get it.
But 2020 on the Gregorian calendar.
Yeah. You've missed 2020 and a lot of other calendars. Yeah. A lot of other calendars. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Walter from Greece, New York. Hiya, Walter. What's up?
Hello there, gentlemen. I'm running under the theory that there's no such thing as a stupid question. So I may have two of those, though, that may come to place. All right. Let's try the first one. Is you were talking about the end of life of Chromebooks.
Yep.
How does that affect those who have converted their laptops via Neverware?
It doesn't. Neverware is a whole different product. It emulates a Chromebook, but it is not from Google. It is from CloudReady.
And it has its own end of life.
Right. It has an entirely separate life cycle.
Okay, that's what I was going to wonder, because just like running like Linux, I've had to go ahead and change from, you know, the end of life, like with Ubuntu, you know, it's time for me to go change over to, you know, Ubuntu 20.04.
Right. So CloudReady has an entirely separate life cycle than Neverware. People have stuff about that on their website, but yeah, it's different.
Trying to find it now.
Okay.
To see if they have it published.
Okay. And my next question is referring back to the person who called that the older neighbor asked about wanting to get a computer.
Yeah.
Doesn't it kind of depend upon the answer should also depend upon her internet provider? Because what I'm getting at is if she doesn't have a computer, she likely doesn't have an internet provider, and she may be having then a choice of three, because maybe she doesn't use cable for TV, so she might want to turn to DSL, or she may want to then get install cable, or the other part is if there's a phablet, right, that you can get a tablet that has a 4G connection, and then she probably could attach to that tablet a Bluetooth keyboard. What do you think?
So
that's a possibility. There are also Chromebooks that do 4G.
Whatever computing device, you know, tablet, laptop, Chromebook, whatever, you're likely going to need an internet service. The ones that have cellular internet built in are typically pretty expensive for cellular internet.
Okay.
And particularly if she's going to spend all day streaming music.
Yeah.
You may not want to pay those rates. Having a provider, if she does have,
she might even have Greenlight in her neighborhood.
She might have Greenlight.
$50 a month, and bam, she's ready to go.
So whatever internet service you'll get, you'll end up needing a wireless router.
Right. But Roger will know that because what was that? Okay, Roger will know that because he's right next door and he's got some sort of internet connection.
Yeah. And maybe he'll let her share
his wireless connection.
If that's allowed under his terms of service.
Under his terms of service, exactly.
Right. That was the fifth one I was going to say. Maybe she's going to borrow onto a neighbor then.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, very good. Thank you for answering my silly questions. Thank you.
The question was not silly.
The only dumb question. And I've been saying for decades, the only dumb question is the one that's not asked.
No, I think Steve's asked some dumb questions over time. Never mind.
We were talking about callers.
Callers, yes. All right, thanks, Walter.
Bye-bye. Did I ever tell you about the story about the Wi-Fi in our office?
No.
We used to have an open Wi-Fi network in our office for people to use when they were waiting for the computers to get fixed. One day someone walked in the store and said, I need a Wi-Fi booster. Go, okay. I'm having trouble getting your Wi-Fi in my bedroom.
What?
Turns out they lived in the trailer park across the street.
Oh, very nice.
And wanted us to put a booster on our network so she could get it in her house. So instead we put a password on the network.
Perfectly reasonable. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so we put a password. And then like 4 or 5 days later, someone else came in, another neighbor who's been in before. Neighbor came in and, well, I stopped getting email. And so we look at her phone and she's not connected to the internet. Well, you have to join your internet service. Oh, I just used yours. That we just put a password on, so it stopped working.
And you can explain to them that it is not in your terms of service to provide internet to the neighborhood. Yep. So you really, now you can have a guest network up as well.
Well, that's what we had. We had a public guest network.
Yeah, right. But for your customers that are in the
store. Customers
are
in the store.
Not across the street in their house.
What's interesting is that a lot of the
good Wi-Fi service, though.
Yeah. A lot of the internet providers are doing something kind of interesting with the, I know Time Warner does it. I think Cox does it as well. You can go places and you'll see a Time Warner or cable internet Wi-Fi network available. And some of the times that's Time Warner is just setting up networks around this area. But in many cases, it's your, say, Time Warner router you have in your house is creating another network for other people to use.
And they're doing that now.
And that's in the terms of service that you agreed to when you signed up for their service.
That's exactly right.
Some people take issue with that because they're using some of your bandwidth to do their stuff.
But as long as you're not charging for bandwidth, or as long as they don't charge you for that bandwidth, you do get a slightly slower speed, but you aren't being charged more. So that's something. If you want to, I mean, you're certainly, you know, Randall Monroe said there should be a national holiday for all the people who have open Wi-Fi networks called Linksys.
Yep. That was the joke that used to be the most popular internet service in the country was Linksys. Everyone had a Linksys network.
The reality is that many people nowadays are providing, and whether that's legal or not is between you and your adult internet service provider, but.
I was like the guy that said, it's plausible deniability. If the police raid my house, wasn't me. I have an open Wi-Fi network.
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. And Dave and I both know that.
They confiscate all your equipment.
Right, yeah. right.
And then you fight to get it back because there's a reasonable doubt that it was you.
Right. Well, maybe there's
Maybe. Yeah. Yep.
There you're guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah. Right. Sadly, that's true.
And because it's on your machine. You know, that is your machine. You're responsible for what's on it. And that goes back to the days when, you know, if somebody came in, and I wasn't trying to be sarcastic or anything else, but if you came in and told me, my computer needs fixing, don't look at the photos. Well, then, by law, I have to.
You have to.
Because you told me, I normally probably wouldn't have. But by you bringing the attention to it, and you got any child porn on there, I'm turning you in. And I did to a number of different people.
And well, you should. And I've been the expert witness in a number of cases.
Same here.
That were very similar to that. And it's, there's no such thing as plausible deniability when it comes to that stuff, unfortunately. Yeah.
We were.
I'm not a lawyer. I don't even play one on television anymore. So don't take my word for it. But that's what I've seen.
Yep.
In cases, you may be able to deny it, but it may not be plausible.
We were setting up a new computer for a customer the other day, and we copy all the data from the old computer, and then we like open the Photos app to make sure it sees the photos.
Sure.
We don't look at the data, but make sure it's there. Opened the web browser, and it reloaded all his open tabs from the other computer, which is kind of neat, but they were all porn.
Yeah.
So the joke was it was you porn, and I myself prefer Pornhub.
There you go. Everybody's got a preference.
Yeah. Which are owned by the same company. There's one company that owns all the porn sites.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites. It's member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1, turn your radio down. 2, turn your radio down lower. 3, remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4, make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5, calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6, if you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7, is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 35 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. Now, the question is, which one of these do I read? I think I will read this one. Apple's Face ID method for authenticating on recent iPhones offers a number of security benefits, and it's a neat trick to boot. But in a pandemic-stricken world where many people either opt or are even required to wear protective masks, users have discovered that Face ID doesn't usually work when they need it to. Those masks interfere with the iPhone's ability to read your face, and at the moment, there's no easy solution. That might change in the next release of iOS. This week, Apple released the third beta of iOS 13.5. I normally don't do beta stuff, but this was interesting. The next major feature release for its mobile operating system. Among other things, the beta introduced new Face ID behavior when users are wearing protective masks. Apple hasn't come up with some magical way to make the phone read your face through the mask, of course. Rather, the update fast-tracks you to passcode entry. Right now, raising the iPhone to use it results in a quick scan with the front-facing TrueDepth sensor array to allow you to access your files, messages, and apps. If your face is obscured, the lock indicator shakes and the phone vibrates, indicating there's a problem. After Face ID times out, you're then prompted to swipe up to get to the screen where you can enter your passcode instead. The iOS 13.5 beta skips a step. Now it gives you the option to swipe up and enter a passcode without waiting to use Face ID to finish failing. This is especially important for Apple Pay. Contactless payments are a good way to minimize direct contact during the pandemic, but Face ID made them something of a hassle for mask wearers. Apple hasn't said when iOS 13.5 will be finalized and released to the public, but it's likely not too far off at this point, judging from the past updates timelines. Not every feature that shows up in an iOS beta gets included in the final release, of course, but this one seems like a necessary change, so it's likely to make it to the finish line, which is why we're talking about it. iOS 13.5 will also introduce Apple's and Google's contact tracing API, meant to help with efforts to tackle the coronavirus by tracking contact with people who are confirmed to be infected. So are you facing Face ID hassles? See what I did there? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415, just like Ed did from Rochester, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Yeah, hi, guys. You shame me into buying a Chromebook. However, I don't have any dedicated line at my house. I heard Dave, though, say that when he takes his Chromebook someplace where there's not a Wi-Fi, he runs it through his phone. That I got. I'm limited through my phone. But how would that work? How would you do that?
You just all you're doing is tethering your phone to the Chromebook. You can do it to that, a tablet, anything.
And there's generally two ways to do that. The easiest way is called hotspot, which is usually the term in the phone. You turn on a mobile hotspot, which then basically sucks in the cellular signal and spits out a Wi-Fi signal, so any Wi-Fi device can use it.
And when you're going to set it up, what you got to do is when you set your phone up for this hotspot, it's got a username and password in it, and it's encrypted. So you have to write that down so that when you go to the Chromebook and say connect to this hotspot, you've got to put in the username and password.
So just anyone can't log on and use your data.
Right. But how does – I didn't know the hotspot. Does that – do you have to look for that, or does that come up automatically?
That's in your phone.
That's built into your phone. In other words, on my phone, I've got a Pixel phone. At the very top, I just swipe down. And then, you know, you've got all your little icons for the Bluetooth and all the flashlight and all these other things. If I swipe it once to the left, there's my hotspot shows up.
Then your computer just sees it as another Wi-Fi device.
Right.
But in your case, because you are setting it up for the first time, you might need to actually set it up. And depending on which phone you've got, it's probably under settings, network, and internet. And you'll see on that list hotspot and tethering.
Yep.
Tethering usually means you're using a USB cable between them, which you can do, but the Wi-Fi hotspot is easier. It can also depend on who your carrier is. Some carriers give you hotspot for free. Some carriers charge you extra for hotspot.
Yeah, because I also
pick it up. It'll read it and it'll pick it up like just going on the web normally. It'll just
Chromebook will just see a Wi-Fi access point. Like
in fact, I have a connect to it.
I have a Raspberry Pi that connects to it.
Right. So it's really just a matter of first you've got to set it up on your phone, as I said, through settings and then networking and then the hotspot.
And that will
give you the place where you put in a username and an ID and a password.
And write that down, because usually it's very long and encrypted, you know, as far as it doesn't look like some phrase or something else. So write it down, and then that way when you go to set it up on that device And if you have multiple devices, you can set it up on all of them.
Right. Now, you will. Right. You need to be aware that, this will eat your battery, so make sure that your phone is plugged in when you're doing this.
Or be careful about watching your battery
life. That's a good
life.
Idea. Hey, thanks a lot. I will do that.
All right, there you go. The ability to do that is a very cool one.
And then some devices have cellular built into them. A lot of times they'll call it cellular, they'll call it 3G or now 4G built into the device. So it basically has a little cell chip built in. And in many cases, you can add a device onto your current cell plan. And again, that depends on the carrier. We generally see it be about $10 a month for a gig or two of data. But you know, as we mentioned earlier, cellular on your tablet is can be quite expensive. And if you don't have the unlimited cellular data, that can eat up your bill pretty quick. So you need to check with your carrier, see if you have hotspotting, and see if there's an extra charge for it.
Yeah, like I say, it's been a godsend. I've got it hooked up to my Chromebook. I've got it hooked up to a tablet and a Raspberry Pi.
Most of the time, customers in our store, we sort of steer them away from the cellular iPads because they almost always have a phone anyway, and hotspotting is cheaper because you don't have to pay the extra for the cellular in the iPad, and you don't have to pay the extra for the cell plan for the iPad when you may only be using it a couple of days a month.
Right. If you are a Verizon customer, you have the right to hotspot.
The T-Mobile also
and T-Mobile
is part
also.
Of it. I don't know about Sprint or AT&T.
Right, but in both of those cases, when they bought Spectra from the government, one of the stipulations was they allow hotspotting because of the Spectra they bought. Uh-huh. So if you are a Verizon or what did you say, T-Mobile?
Yeah.
T-Mobile.
Customer, then you have the right to do that. I am a Verizon customer, so I do have the right to do that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Stosh from Webster, New York. Hi, Stosh. What's up?
Thanks for taking my call, guys. Actually, a two-part quick question, actually. The first one is in regards to Lenovo Chromebooks.
Yeah.
I'm noticing when I wake up the Chromebook, it's from its sleep mode or whatever you want to call it, that it's lagging because it's trying to catch up with all the messages. And if I have, like, Facebook posts or whatever, or email messages,
right,
it takes, like, a couple minutes for it to catch up. I don't know if there's a way around that where, you know, aside from turning it off and just turning it on, that I could just start wherever, you know, like my virtual footprint is, so to speak.
Right. There kind of isn't. What you can do is set all of those into a folder, and all of those things that you want to open like that into a folder. And then you can right click on the folder, or if you're using a Chromebook, double tap the pad, and then you can say open all, and as long as there aren't too many, like fewer than say 20, it'll open them all up. But in any case, it will lag a little bit as it starts all those up and catches up. The reality is that your Chromebook may not be nearly as powerful as your desktop, so it's going to be slower.
A lot of people like setting those startup options because I always use my mail, I always have my WordPress, I always have my web browser. But then they don't realize it takes longer to open every time.
Right.
Yeah, that's true. I appreciate that input. I was also asking a real quick question here about the Discovery Easy Store, those terabyte like backups. I'm wondering if they can be used at all in a way as like its own separate hard drive instead of just a backup for like a laptop. I'm just curious.
Virtually every hard drive can be used as just a hard drive. Typically, the ones that are marketed as a backup drive will come with extra software to do the backup for you.
Like the
which I always
drives.
Thought was interesting because there's backup software built into every OS. You don't need something extra. You just don't install the backup software it comes with, and you can use it as a hard drive.
Yeah. I got a Buffalo drive. I think it was a 2 terabyte.
Mm-hmm.
It was only like $120.
Yeah. Hard drives are so cheap these days.
And it just hangs off my network, and I just have it now. I just added one more place that now automatically it just backs it right on up. All the machines go to that versus
We've got 3 recoveries running in the office now for people that didn't back up. It's so cheap to get a hard drive to back up onto.
Yeah.
But in your particular case, Stosh, you should be able to use almost any backup drive as just a standard hard drive.
Yeah.
A lot of them are designed so that when you plug them in.
Video box, what do you call it? The vidbox converter. I'm doing old videotapes to DVDs now, and it seems to be accruing on my laptop. So yep. I'm just trying to make sure I have ample room, maybe on
sure.
a backup.
I would,
if I need to use it.
I would expect that. I'm looking at some different models here. I expect that a drive that's marketed as backup might be a little more expensive because it has the software on it instead of just a raw hard drive.
But the thing is you can sit there, if you want to get really good at it, you can go out and just build yourself a Raspberry Pi. Raspberry Pi, you know.
Yeah, but in this case, that's not going to work because he needs it attached to the machine specifically for his video editing. And one of the things that you're going to have to be aware of, Stosh, is that USB is much slower than any other method of connecting to a hard drive.
So make sure you get USB 3.
Right. Make sure your laptop will do USB 3 and make sure that the drive you get is USB 3 because that's the fastest connection you're going to get.
No, I was going to say, if he wanted to hook that drive up to a network,
right,
instead of buying a USB, you know, like we were saying before, a Buffalo drive and going through all that expense, a Raspberry Pi is cheaper. You can hook that external 1 terabyte hard drive up to that and put an operating system on it, and you got another computer that you can tie to your network. Now it's a networked hard drive that can be shared with all your machines.
Yep, some hard drives have an Ethernet port built in to be a network hard drive, or you can build your own file server, basically, with a Raspberry Pi.
Right. Whether it will work properly with his software
is
a separate issue, which is
video,
why I said that's not going to be a good solution.
For video conversion like that, probably not.
Which is
slow.
Why he needs it connected directly to his machine.
Yeah.
And
that will probably even be slow, you know? I mean,
well, that's what I said, because it's USB, but that will at least present as a drive letter.
Yeah. Yep. USB 3 is better. Thunderbolt would be best.
Right.
But Thunderbolt is much more expensive.
And I don't believe that Lenovo Chromebooks have those.
Yeah.
But other than that, you should be okay.
Well, thank you guys. Appreciate everything you guys always do. You're always there for me. So I'll be sure as soon as I get my next paycheck, I'll be doing a donation for you guys.
Thank you so much. And thank you so much. We appreciate that. We do understand these times, but you must understand that we want to stay on the air. So it works the other way around, too. Thanks, Stosh.
All right.
Yep. So you remember when USB came out on how amazing it was, because it just, you plugged it in and it worked at 10 megabit.
Yeah.
And then USB 2 was 400. USB 3 is 5 gigabit. That sounds fast. Thunderbolt is 40 gigabit.
Right.
And it's bidirectional, so you can do 40 send and 40 receive at the same time.
Right.
So it's you pay more for speed. And we're typically seeing now a lot of the high-end video people have been using Thunderbolt for a long time. The confusion now is that Thunderbolt 3 and USB 3.1 are using the same Type-C connector.
Right.
And a lot of people, it's being called Thunderbolt or USB Type-C or just USB-C connectors. And when you see that connector, you can't tell whether it's Thunderbolt 3 or USB until you look at the icon to see which icon it has.
Right.
Because they are completely different protocols that just happen to use the same connector.
Right.
Just to make things easy for us.
Sure, exactly. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Fred from Rochester, New York. What's up, Fred?
Well, you started to answer a question about a backup drive, external hard drive that you could, when you plug it in, it goes right to installing the software that I don't need.
Right.
How do I bypass that?
Well, the easy way is don't buy a drive that has backup software on it. Just buy a raw drive. The other way is just use the formatter, disk manager, and reformat it.
If what you're looking for is storage attached to your local network,
correct,
that is called network attached storage or an NAS drive.
Okay.
And so you should be able to buy NAS drives that essentially are a hard drive in a box with an Ethernet connection, and that will attach to your network and present itself as a drive on the network. And you should be able to attach to that and do whatever you want to do. In many ways, that will be faster, depending on the speed of your network, than a USB connection. So, for example, I have a gigabit network in my home. So as long as that NAS drive will do gigabit.
Yep.
And it will. Mine will. I can attach. I can send files to it at gigabit speed.
it's also much more convenient, especially with laptops, where you don't have to remember to plug the hard drive and do your backup all the time.
Okay.
And some people, if you have a spare computer lying around, you can plug a hard drive into it and then share it from that computer to the network and make a NAS drive out of it. Yeah.
Right, and that's what Dave was saying about the Raspberry Pi. That works for backup. It may be too slow and incapable of being done for the product, for the thing that that guy wanted.
Well, the video editing.
For video editing. But for standard backup on a network, a Raspberry Pi attached drive or a drive that just does straight NAS is preferable, easy. You buy a NAS drive and you just plug it into your network. I've got a 2 gig, terabyte drive that I've just plugged into the network and then set it up so that my wife's machine backs up to it, my machine backs up to it, and it's an easy thing to set up and leave running.
Okay, but my question still is that the external hard drive that I have in hand, I can eliminate that software.
Yes, you should be able to
reformat
the drive and eliminate the software you've got. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Sure. Or in fact, once it installs, uninstall it and just don't use it.
Yeah.
That for most of them that works as well.
There was a brand, I forget what it was. It had a hidden partition.
Yeah.
That had the backup software on it, and we couldn't figure out where it was. We erased and reformatted the drive, and that wasn't enough.
No, right.
And so we couldn't get it to stop mounting. We couldn't figure out how to turn off the auto mount. And finally we said, well, just ignore that icon or get a new drive.
Yeah, right. As long as you don't actually run it.
Yeah. For the regular home user that just wants to plug it in and back up their stuff, that's fine. I get a little annoyed about seeing these ads. Here, back up your pictures by, plug this in. It's a hard drive with backup software on it. It's no big deal.
Yeah, big deal. Well, it's essentially a time machine, right? I mean, if you plug in a time machine drive, it automatically starts your backup. It
backs up all your stuff, yeah.
Right, but that's what it's supposed to do.
Yeah.
So if you've already got one of those, you have a little work to do. But if that's not what you want specifically, then buying a NAS drive or a Raspberry Pi that you can attach a drive to, that sort of fare. Makes more sense.
And you don't have to believe the TV commercials that say this is the only thing that will back up your pictures.
Yeah.
You don't have to buy anything special to back up. You just buy a drive and use the software in your computer.
Right. Well, and as we've talked about before, I do a network backup.
Thing of it is most folks, you do their pictures on their phone, and from there you have it automatically go up to the Google Cloud.
Yep.
To Google Photos.
Right.
I don't even think about it. It's automatically just happens, and they're up there. And they're up there safe, and I don't have to worry about a computer crashing.
And you kind of have to work hard to have that not happen.
And if you and if you need a program, you might want to take a look at asknick.com/backup.php, where I list a whole bunch of different programs for a whole bunch of different operating systems, and also talk about pCloud, which is a cloud backup solution. Install it and forget. It's a set and forget. Once you've got it set up, you're done. And I've done it for me. I've done it for my wife, which means that we back up. You've got the stuff on your machine. We've got a backup on my network, and we've got a cloud backup in case anything else happens.
That's the 3-2-1 backup on another type of media. I thought it used to be tape. No.
Right, man. I've still got it cleaning out, and I found a couple of tapes.
You have a tape reader?
No. They were unopened, so I know that I'm not missing anything. All right, that's it. That music tells us we're done for another week. Time flew this week, I'll tell you that. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I want to thank every single person who called in. For those of you who called in at the absolute last moment, I'm sorry. We can't do what we can't do. Please call earlier next week. And that's it. We're done for another week. Thanks to all of you. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. Let me once again thank each and every one of you. We made our goal. This show will continue. We appreciate your help in the latest drive. And we will see you next week on Soundbites on member supported Jazz 90.1. See you in just 166 hours.